0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until 3 o'clock today. And I want to go to Mildred first of all. Mildred, good afternoon to you.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
I'm great, Mildred. And Mildred, you're great because you are in Ballina waiting for the man himself.
Mr. Joe Biden. I met him twice, thanks be to God. But there's nothing like meeting him a third time. So I'm hoping to the Lord I'll meet him. So I'm in the best place possible. I'm right across from the cathedral. So I'm very, very lucky.
Great stuff. We'll talk to you about that maybe in a minute. But Mildred,
yes,
there's a little fly in the ointment today because there's been quite the reaction to this cartoon that appeared in the Times, the London Times newspaper we're talking about now.
Yes,
and this
yes,
is, I'll explain it to me. We put it up on our own Twitter feed there, just in case people didn't take the Times.
Let me
explain it to people, Mildred, in case they haven't seen it. So it's about the Biden visit, and it shows basically three Bidens dressed up as leprechauns, dancing a jig with pints of Guinness in their hands. And it says, "I just love," and it says Northern very quietly and Ireland very, very loudly. And we're told by Peter Brook, who's the cartoonist who drew it, that it was about the emphasis by, I think he said, the emphasis by Blarney Biden, I think was it. I don't have it in front of me now. That's what that's why he put this cartoon and drew this cartoon in this way. You didn't like that cartoon, Mildred?
No, I didn't. If he thought he was being funny, he wasn't. Because not alone is it a slag on Biden, but it's a slag on Ireland and our Irish dancing, which has been all over the world and admired and enjoyed all over the world. And shame on him. And that he's insulting, not alone, he's insulting the Americans and Mr. Biden, but he's insulting us Irish people. Who, believe it or not, whether he likes it or not, built Britain for them. That went over to England and built a shame on them for making a skit of our lovely, beautiful Irish dancing and our lovely president that took his time to come out here. Shame on him.
And I tell you, because I know you're not the only one who took umbrage to that now, Mildred. There's been a huge reaction to it online with the, you know, all sorts of... One of the lines that jumped out at me was Philip Nolan, who's a journalist here. And he said, Punch called, and he's talking about, of course, that Punch magazine. And he said, they want you back in 1867. So he's basically saying it goes back to those days of those racist cartoons in Punch magazine, that's how bad it was. But a huge number of people saying it was stereotypical, it was anti-Catholic, anti-Irish.
Anti-everything. But then would you be surprised with them? Would you? I mean, they're just jealous because we have such a great relationship with America and with Mr. Biden. And they're just jealous about that. And maybe if they got down off their high horses, they'd be just as friendly with Mr. Biden. Shame on whoever. He should be ashamed to do that on a week that's in it. Shame.
Do you think it is just pure jealousy? Because, I mean, there definitely was that tinge of...
Of course it's jealousy, of course. Envy and jealousy that this should happen. And I'm just so sad that this should be brought up. The man that had took time off, of his busy surgery to go and call at Knock Fine and even have the little bit of religion, bring his little bit of religion into it. The man done that, and he'll have his private visit there, and then he'll come, and as you can see, he's a man of the people. He talks to everybody. I met the man twice, privileged to have met him twice. So it's shame on that man that done that.
Where did you meet him, Mildred?
I met him in Castlebar twice. He came, and he was with Inverkenny, and he was at the golf links in Castlebar, and he was planting a tree. And then he came to Castlebar to turn the sod for the hospice hospital in Castlebar, which they're calling after his son, Bo. So I met him there. So I met him twice. I'm privileged to have met him there. So I'm delighted.
And did
but there's nothing like meeting him a third time, you know.
Did you actually meet him? Like, did you shake his hand? Did you get an old selfie?
Oh, no, I met him, and I've the biggest hug with him ever. And I have a lovely picture of the two of us together, and I looking up into his face. And
lovingly.
Maybe someday I'll show it to you.
Were you looking up lovingly into his face, Mildred?
I sure was lovingly into his face, because he's such a wonderful, wonderful human being. I mean, he reminded me of all my brothers that went away to America and England and came back. He reminded me of them. Why wouldn't he? I got the loveliest hug from both days. Yes. Thanks, Shane McKenna.
Why do you think there's such an affection for him here, actually? I mean, you obviously have a very special fondness for him, but I mean, there is such warmth for him out there.
Well, we had it for Kennedy, but it was different times in Ireland. Now, thank God, we can all get out there and travel, and hope to God that we'll get even a sighting of him, which is, I think, is all I will get today, because the town is thronged with people and helicopters and policemen and security men. But they're all in good humour, and they're all in lovely, that friendly humour, as much as they look what's coming to Ballinair today. It's just a great atmosphere here in Ballinair. Super. It's great for Mayo.
And did you have to get up early to get in there? Because it sounds like you've got a great spot.
Yeah, I had a great spot. I was here this morning at 10 o'clock. I sure was, yeah.
And you're not...
I'm still standing in the stiletto heels. By 9 o'clock tonight, I don't know what I'll be like.
Mildred, you did not go to see Biden in your stilettos, did you?
Don't own a pair of flat shoes.
Fair play to you.
Don't own a pair of flat shoes. I walked down Fifth Avenue marching with a marching band in stiletto heels 3 weeks ago.
You'll have to send us in a photo.
I'll do better. I'll go up someday and I'll call into your office and I'll show you all the lovely photographs. Brilliant. So, you see, I'm blessed because I make the effort to come, and I think there's an effort out there on the streets. I have made the effort to come. So that man is in the minority that done that skit.
And come here to me about, I mean, obviously the private visit, and it was described as a private visit to Knock. That's happening today as well. Were you, you have a connection with Knock, don't you?
Yeah, I have volunteered in Knock as a handmaid for the last 36 years.
I haven't heard that for a long time, Mildred, a handmaid of Knock.
That's right. The handmaids and stewards. They have changed the name now, of course, in the last 2 or 3 years to Corduera, Friends of Mary. But I was a handmaid in Knock, volunteered in it, and still volunteering in Knock for the last 36 years. And I love every second of it.
What does a handmaiden of Knock? And I suppose we have to say it, Mildred, that's because of the other handmaiden that's out there now. They didn't want an association with the novel.
Yeah, well, there was a committee formed a couple of years ago in Knock, and they changed the name, they changed the uniform, they changed a lot of things, but they changed the name then to Corduera,
which is
called Friends of Mary.
And tell me, what was the uniform? What was?
The uniform was it was a long white dress, white coat, and a veil. And then on the front of the veil, it had the rose, because it was the only place Our Lady appeared where she wore a rose. So she had the golden rose, you see. So that was our uniform.
Would you wear that with your stilettos, Mildred?
Yeah, well, believe it or not, clearly, I'm one of these women that has never worn flat shoes in their life. So I have to wear the stiletto somewhere, and even out mowing the lawn.
We'll have to do another program on that one, Mildred. That is.
Well, you're welcome to do it any time. But
I was going to ask you about Knock, because, you know, there's a lot of debate about Knock, and kind of touching on what we're talking about now, about people saying Knock is old-fashioned, it's a bit tacky.
No,
you wouldn't go along with that at all?
Not anymore. No. Our Basilica in Knock is second to none in the world. I've been in St. Patrick's Cathedral, both the new one and the old one, and it's not a patch on the new Basilica in Knock. Knock is not tacky. And if it was the likes of I would be in Knock, say, 4 days a week.
Would you?
Whenever I can. You'll meet every day you go, you'll meet hundreds of Americans and English and German and French. If Knock was tacky, they wouldn't be coming to it. And we have the Chapel of Reconciliation, non-stop flow of people in and in and out and in and out from going to confession. It's a magnificent, beautiful, beautiful place. And, you know, people say to me, well, have you ever seen any miracles or anything? There's miracles every day in Knock. Every day there's people coming to Knock and seeing miracles in their life or in somebody else's life or getting maybe, as they might say in their own language, cured or peace, teaching themselves to learn to live with whatever they've been told. Knock is a wonderful, it's a great place.
Okay, but when you say miracles, that's what you're saying really, is that you get the good grace, as they would say, to cope with what burdens you're carrying.
Sorry, did I say that again, Katie?
I'm saying when you say miracles, you're saying that people get the good grace or the grace to cope with what they have to deal with. That's the miracle that you see happening every day.
That's the miracle that is happening every single day that you go to Knock, and you'll see queues of people there at the gable, and they're standing, and they get peace of mind, and people that never went to confession ever. You'll see them going to confession for the very, 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 very first time. Because we volunteer, so you might be put any place in the grounds of Knock. You might be put down in the Chapel of Reconciliation. You might be put in the Basilica. You might be put out on the grounds talking to people. So I meet people every day that I go to Knock, and I see it with my own eyes.
And you weren't tempted to go down there to get a good glimpse of Joe?
No,
you might get him to yourself down there today?
No, Knock was a private thing today. It's totally, totally, totally private. And even though I know Knock inside out, it's a private visit, and it should be left private to him.
Yeah, and
himself and Father Richard.
Will people go down there, I wonder? It just occurred to me now as I'm talking
They'll go on the street and the roundabout, because he's coming by the Beast, of course. He's coming in the Beast, and he'll come to the roundabout, and he'll kind of come in the back way into Knock. But it's a private visit, and, you know, Father Richard has worked so tireless to get Knock to where it is today, and isn't he being rewarded today by Biden coming on a private visit to Knock, isn't he?
It's a very special day, I'm sure, for everyone connected.
And Monsignor Horan, God bless him, the man that started it all.
Can you imagine what he would be thinking now
if
he realised that Air Force One landing?
did nobody stop him going out to view it? He was the first one out there. He was a great character. He was a wonderful character.
Bring us back to where you are, Mildred, and paint the picture for us. So you're standing in front of the cathedral right now, are you?
Well, I'm standing right in front of now because of the awful noise. It mightn't be good radio for you, but I'll do the very best now, this very minute, to explain to you. And I hope it's not too noisy for you. But there's a lot of noise, and there's a lot of people talking. But we'll walk and we'll talk. I'm just on the bridge. I'm just on the bridge now, and it's absolutely decked out in all the Irish flags, American flags. All young people out their faces painted. The girls doing the best they can. Big stage and ready for off. The cathedral is looking brilliant. Big high class stages with open to the public. President Joe Biden and everything. It's just super duper. Of course, they have to stop the traffic and all that sort of thing. But there's children and mothers and fathers every place. I'm going back in again now where it's nice and quiet.
Right. Well, you didn't. You know what? You missed your calling as a reporter, Mildred. There's no doubt about that. You have a very good eye for what you need to tell us. Tell me, what's the weather like?
Oh, it's absolutely. Just now, just this very, very. It's just like a. As did they say in Ireland, a soft shower.
Yeah, is
that... But nothing, it's gone again now. It just was there for about 2 minutes and then it's gone again now. It's
right.
Nothing, it's warm. It's quite warm, actually, because you see of all these... Now, there's cameras every place. And I just met a group of people in from NCF in the television crowd. oh, what's the name of them? Not CNN, another crowd from America. And they're
NBC, NBC?
NBC, that's the one, NBC. Yeah. And they're having a great time, absolutely. They're loving every second of it. And all the gang are talking to them, and kids are coming up, and faces painted, and they have all their flags with them. And it's just a wonderful place.
Are you giving interviews down there? Are you giving interviews, surely to God? You're spreading yourself down there, Mildred.
Well, you know, it's great to be part of it, isn't it? You know, and you know, the highlight of this for Biden is Balnair. You know that.
Say that, yes.
The highlight for Mr. Biden was Balnair.
Oh, yeah, he has said that, hasn't he? Yeah,
and he can relax. He can relax, and he won't have to be choosing his words.
Well, some might say he should have chosen his words a bit better a couple of times during the week.
Never mind. We won't go there. Everybody has a slip of the tongue in that time. Katie, if the people could only, just even be part of this and come out and enjoy it, and be part of Balinair, every street, every corner is filled with people. And getting ready already now at this time to queue for when the gates open at 5 o'clock.
So you will have been there. You will have been there for 7 hours at that stage.
Yeah, but just what harm? What harm? That's no harm.
Listen,
I'm able to do it, and I'll do it.
If I don't see you on my television news this evening getting a massive hug from that man, I'll be very disappointed.
Katie, I don't think you will, because they're not letting anybody, only the dignitaries across the river, and I haven't come into that category yet, but you never know.
I think you need to have a word with a few of those guards.
Katie, someday I land into your office.
I look forward to that day for sure and certain. This is the equivalent for you. Like, what is this? Like, would you have a big rock star that you'd go to see in this way? Is this what this feels like for you right now, Mildred?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, I'm in music all my life. I was a drummer with an all girl show band years ago, and music would have been my life. And I'd never want to go and see. The only one I ever wanted to go and see, and I never got to, was Cliff Richard. That was the only one I ever wanted to see. But we were playing. I've been playing music since I was 12 years of age, and we're out in bands all over the country. And as I said, I was a drummer with an all girls show band. So
an all girls show band. What years are we talking about? Did you be on the road?
We're talking about started in 65.
Well, now. We're going to be talking about.
No. I remember, after coming from America after playing with the drums.
Well, now, we'll be talking later on in the show about Mary Quant and the miniskirts and that era. So, would you have been with the miniskirts in the show band?
Yes, I sure was. Myself and Eileen King were with the miniskirts, and if you saw me this very minute, I have it at the minute as well.
You pulled out the miniskirt for Joe Biden.
Yeah. Well, I never wore a trouser in my life, only with the band, and I hated it. But I always wear a skirt or a dress. I always. You'll always see my knees, Katie.
And always a good look, I think. I feel myself.
Yeah. You'll always see my knees, anyway, that's one joke in Gaelic.
The music that you used to play, was it a show band?
We were with the Cayley band first. We were an all-girls Cayley band, and then we changed from the Cayley band to a show band. So we were with an all-girls, which was called the Grenada Girls Show Band.
I would love to see a picture of that. If you do, and honestly, if you do have a picture of that, we'll have to get our hands on it, because that sounds brilliant.
Well, I'm telling you, your office. I'll be heading for your office one of these days. I'll be heading for that, yeah. I've been privileged down through the years with the music. And my late husband was a music teacher. And then when he died, I took over the teaching of the music and the dancing. And teaching set dancing and line dancing for the last 25 years. And still doing it four nights a week.
Set dancing and line dancing?
Yeah, do it four nights a week at the minute.
It's a brilliant thing to do, though, isn't it? Dancing has to be the best way to stay fit.
Keeps you young. I can have you time to listen to a short story.
Go on, go on.
A lady used to come to me to do the set dancing, and the poor thing got Alzheimer's. She didn't know me, she didn't know her daughter, she didn't know anybody. And the daughter said to me, Mildred, she said, is there any way that I could take my mother to your class? And I said, of course, bring her down anytime she comes along. Now, remember, the lady didn't know anybody. She was so bad with the Alzheimer's. So she came into my class, I put on the music and I took her, and she danced every bit of the Connemara set with me.
Wow.
Every bit of it.
It's incredible. It touches a part of you that you can, that nothing else will, isn't it? Isn't that it?
Nothing will. She danced every bit of it. I hadn't to call it out. I hadn't to tell her. She went with the music and she danced every bit of that. And that was Mary Kinney from Castlereagh. And I will always tell that to people. And tell that to people that are suffering in the very early ages of Alzheimer's.
How important it is that this is a way back to them, basically.
Not alone that I'm out. People look at me and they look me up and down. And say, are you still dancing? What would they want me to do? Lie down and die? No, I'll be dancing and playing music while I'm alive and while I'm able to go. Yeah.
Can I say, Mildred? Yes. I wish you the absolute, absolute best day today.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you so much.
And you know what? As an appreciation of my enjoyment of our chat, we'll give you a little bolt of Cliff to get you going on the day.
God bless. God bless you. Thank you so much.
Walking, sleeping, walking, living dog. I got to do my best to please her just 'cause she's a living dog. I got a roving eye and that is why she satisfies my soul. I got the one and only walking, talking, living dog.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Now, what a tonic Mildred was, lads. Wasn't she just the biz? I really, really enjoyed that chat. And I'm going to go back now to the actual, what Mildred rang to talk about, which was that cartoon about Joe Biden's visit and portraying Joe Biden in a leprechaun outfit with the pint of Guinness and the jig dancing. I'll go to James. James, good afternoon to you.
Hello, good afternoon to you. I just want to wish... I heard Mildred talking there. Down this part of the world, she's the queen of dancing. But I just wanted to make the point that during the so-called famine here, that wasn't a famine at all, the Times of London had an editorial. And I can remember closely what it said. It said, thankfully, soon the Milesian, that was the Bog Irish, would be as scarce along the banks of the Shannon as the red man is now along the banks of the Hudson.
Yeah.
And that was an editorial in the Times of London. And at the time, the Irishman, he was always portrayed in cartoon form in a simian fashion. That means in an ape-like character, you know? So they have form in this, you know, they have plenty of form in this, you know?
Well, that was the point that, as I said, I quoted Philip Nolan earlier on saying, punch called, they want you back in 1867. And I think that is that's the general feeling about that cartoon, that it's very stereotypical, very taking us back. But, you know, let me just put this out there. You don't have to go back to 1867 for this. I mean, if you look at this, we've the classic portrayal of Irish people in The Simpsons has been very controversial for a long time. And even... Joe Biden, dare I say it, himself, hasn't done us any favours on this front. I know he doesn't drink at all, but he's actually joked that he is maybe the only Irish man who doesn't drink. And he's joked that he might be Irish, but he's not stupid.
Like, we have been part of the American story since the very beginning. And I leave you with this. You should read General George Washington's order for the day, the 17th of March, 1780, when the United States Army wasn't going very well. St. Patrick's Day, 1780, at Morristown, New Jersey. Read his general orders for that day. He issued a holiday, the first holiday that the United States Army was ever given in the field. St. Patrick's Day, 1780. That's how high Irish people have been thought of in America and are thought of in America. So,
how do you feel about this visit? Because, I mean, I think people have really taken to Joe Biden in a way that maybe even surprised themselves.
Look, we can all fall out with him over politics, but it's a family thing. He's one of us, and he's come. He recognises us as his own. Do you know, Irish people, when they heard country music back in the 60s, they recognised, that's us, you know. That's why, you know, the history of, we were there at the beginning, and all this fakery about Scotch-Irish, that was only a term that was invented in the 1870s. It was invented for political reasons. But the Irish were at least half of George Washington's army was Irish. And I can tell you this, in the Royal Inquiry they had, the Royal Commission after the loss of America, witness after witness said that the Pennsylvania line, which was the backbone of George Washington's army, he says the Pennsylvania line would be better referred to as the line of Ireland. Now, isn't that something? No?
Yeah, it is. I mean, the connections are extra. I'm just, as I'm talking to you, James, I'm watching shots of Air Force One landing at Knock Airport. I can't get the image of Monsignor Horn out of my head as I'm watching that.
Oh, no, and your colleague, Jim Fahey.
Yes, indeed.
What are you doing here, Father? I'm building an airport, Jim. But don't tell the government.
That is one of the classic bits of archive that we have in the RTE news files. Another great man, Jim Fahey.
It'll be repeated. And Monsignor Horn, he's kept alive communities far to the west of Knock Airport. The small communities, there's people commuting now from the London area on a Friday evening back to their homes in the west of Ireland, you know, so.
Yeah, it is. And I know some of those people, actually, that it's an extraordinary amenity that could never have been dreamt up by anyone other than Monsignor Horn, I think. he was definitely considered quite mad, actually, I think, when he was pushing it first. But
look at it now.
There is Air Force One landing it.
Yeah, look, it's just it has done wonders for the west of Ireland, and only he could see it. Do you know, the same year, you know, in Knock Airport, they had to drain a bog, then they had to move the bog, then they had to level a mountain before ever they started to build the airport. Yeah. And they did that for 14 million that time. They didn't put it wasn't blacktopped, but at the same year, they put an extension on the end of the main runway in Dublin Airport, and it cost 68 million. Do you know? So that'll tell you the priorities at the time.
It remains an extraordinary story. It is an absolute, and it's the classic, if you build it, they will come.
That's right. Yeah.
You know, what has been done there, and it is just extraordinary watching that plane land there and what's happening. In Mayo today, it is some day for the county of Mayo and the people of Mayo, that's for sure. James, thanks so much for that.
It was lovely to talk to you. Thank you very much.
Likewise, absolutely likewise. Thanks, James. Can I go to Kevin? Kevin, good afternoon.
Hello, Katie. How are you?
Good.
I was just thinking that Mildred could take over the late ladies if she'd let any of the guests speak. But she's quite
honestly,
a character.
She is. I said she was a fantastic reporter, but you're right. She'd be just a fantastic presenter. I'd watch for sure.
I'd watch, but I don't think the guests get a chance to speak. But whatever, that's another story. I hope she gets to visit President Biden this afternoon to make her day.
Yes, indeed,
well.
She will. Yeah, and you were calling in about the about that cartoon again, getting us back to the cartoon and that the stereotyping of the drunken jig dancing Irish.
Yeah, well, I've just looked at the cartoon and I was waiting all week for, and I know I'm go on about this a bit, but I've been waiting all week for reference to Guinness, and I know Mr. President Biden doesn't drink, and there was no reference to Guinness at all during the week, and I just found it ironic that it had to be an English cartoonist that brings this up. I also find it a small bit insulting that perhaps that's the London Times will print such an image of the Irish people, but that's a different story. But I was wondering all week, when are Guinness going to get in on the act? And now they get in it, but courtesy of an English newspaper.
Well,
and I just thought it was strange.
Well, let me just say to you now, we just got a text in on that. And it says, of course, we're seen as drunken river dancing leprechauns. This is how we sell Ireland for tourism. This listener says, at Dublin Airport, huge advertising of the Guinness experience, the Jameson experience, etc. Temple Bar is promoted as the second thing on the list after the Guinness experience. We get what we ask for. There is no doubt that we do promote ourselves around Guinness and whiskey and all of that.
Yeah, but I just thought this week, since the president landed, there hasn't actually been a reference to James's Gate or to Guinness's or anything. And I thought this is a kind of a change in policy here, that whether it is that because the president doesn't drink and that it probably wasn't a graph or a draw for Guinness to get involved in this. And I thought it's great to see a visit, because even Obama had his point.
It's not over yet, Kevin. There might be a point.
There might be
a Guinness 0.0 shoved into his hand in Ballinara this evening.
I have my fingers crossed tonight to see. I know he's speaking at about 9 o'clock in Ballinara, and I will be watching to see if Guinness get in on the act. But I just thought this time that Guinness had stayed quiet in Ireland, and I thought, well, fair balsam. You know, whoever organised this has kind of recognised that maybe he doesn't drink. Maybe we're not the galloping, stupid, drunken Irish people. But the London Times to print such a satirical view of the Irish people, to me, it just sickens me, because, I mean, when you think of the amount of Irish people that have gone over to England as nurses and teachers, etc., and are keeping England going, that is this really what they think of us? And the other thing about that art, that little cartoon that caught me, was the way that Northern Ireland was in very, very small letters.
Well, I think that was his point,
Ireland
though.
Was in very big letters.
Yeah, but I think that was the dig. That was the dig. But he was getting in was that it was only Ireland that really mattered to.
That's what I mean. Yeah, it was a real distinction between Britain and Ireland. You know,
but
it was.
I just
thought it was in bad taste.
What about Mildred's analysis of it, actually, which is that it was basically jealousy, because as I think it was Alex Thompson on Channel 4 News last night put it, he's the special correspondent on Channel 4 News, saying that while the British speak about their special relationship with the United States all the time, that the Irish live it, and that there is a jealousy
there
now.
Well, I'll tell you what shocked me there. Rishi Sunak, I know, had coffee with President Biden on the first part of the visit in Belfast. And on the second part of the visit, apparently Rishi Sunak had a separate engagement in Belfast and left the president on his own. And I thought that was extraordinary, because this was a British visit, if you like, down the north. And you would have thought that the British Prime Minister would have made his day available to be with the American president. But all he had was a couple of coffee. And then, due to reports later on today, he left President Biden on his own because he had a separate visit. And I was sitting here going, how can the British Prime Minister have a separate visit in Belfast when the American President, the most powerful man in the world, is here? And I was very taken with his speech in the Shannon. I thought he got very emotional after it. I think he's very invested in the Good Friday Agreement. I think he's very invested in Putin and the Ukraine and the whole lot. And for Rishi Sunak to walk away from that on the same day and just have a cup of coffee with him, I thought that to me was bizarre.
Did you?
It was his only visit down the north.
Did you see those shots? It did seem to me that there it seemed a bit tense, did you not think?
It seemed that there was distance to me. Yeah. I would have thought that they'd have breakfast. I would have thought they'd have their civil servants. I would have thought that perhaps, maybe, they might have gone to Stormont and dragged those politicians with them to have a speech in Stormont and say, look, I know his line is, this is not my problem, this is your problem, and try and sort it out. But you would have thought that maybe it would have been a great idea for Rishi Sunak and the President of America to say, well, let's go up to Stormont, bring all the MLAs up. I know they're not in sitting at the moment, but we'll have a chat with them. We'll see how far we can go. I think it was a terrible, terrible opportunity missed by not going up there. But definitely for me, even when they sat down at the table to have coffee, I thought to myself, there's a little bit of difference between these two men that I'm, and I mean, I'm just an ordinary Joe Soap, but that I could see I wasn't comfortable with. And I thought it was very, 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 very strange. But even further than that was the fact that Rishi Sunak disappeared into Belfast on the same day and said, I'm going to leave him alone now. I mean, it didn't happen in the Republic, and this was as much as a Northern Ireland visit as it was a Republic visit. This was to get two different entities together and knock their heads together and say, look, the whole world is facing the same problems. Let's sit down, let's talk about it. But there definitely was tension, in my opinion, between Rishi Sunak and the President of America, and I'd love to know what it was.
Yeah, you would. You'd love to be a fly on the wall there, really, to see what was said and what wasn't said. I suppose it's probably more to the point.
Well, exactly.
Did you go and see him, Kevin, or would you bother?
Well, I've been lucky enough. I've seen most of the American presidents during my career in the airport, and I'm presidential now, if you like. I mean, to me, look, he's a lovely man. I've heard him speak before. I've seen him slip down the steps of a big airport.
And I'm watching him now.
No, I was going to finish that off. He's 82. Everybody's entitled to make a slip up. Everybody's entitled. But I tell you one thing. I think from looking at him and watching him on the television now and since he arrived, he's been a fabulous, fabulous statesman. And I think his speeches have been spot on. And I am quite sure that in Ballina tonight he'll have the right words to say and a great thing to say. And I think it's marvellous that he brought his son Hunter. You know, to take him out of his own problems that he's in America, that he's saying, Hunter's my son, I'm taking him with me. And I think that's fantastic. And his sister is there as well. I think he's made a great effort to make this not just a state visit, but a family visit. And I think full credit to him. I look at him and Trump comes into my mind and I'm wondering, could Trump behave the same? I don't know.
I'm literally watching the pictures of him. He's just literally alighted down off the steps of the plane in Knock. He has, Eamon Ryan is getting his go. We had Micheál got the first go. Leo Varadkar had him yesterday. And it's time for Eamon Ryan now to step in. And he's chatting. He's there's a great gathering there.
Isn't it great?
Who else do I see there? I see Dara, the local... The local Fianna Fáil TD there is. Who else is there? I'm trying to see if I can spot. There's a Lord Mayor. There's a Lord Mayoral chair there. A big day for everyone up there. It is everyone looking in great form. He looks very, very happy. I'd say they are going to have quite the day in Mayo
today.
Well,
for an 82-year-old man, and I know they're talking about will he run in 2024, but I mean, I'm 62. I mean, he has great stamina. Because, I mean, the schedule that he has and the fact that he has time for everybody and the fact that he doesn't really care if things run late, that he'd still be there, I think he's fantastic.
I'll tell you, he has some energy. There's no doubt about that. I don't know how many of us would be able to keep up with that kind of a schedule.
He shouldn't be portrayed as some type of Irish leprechaun, because Britain have as much invested in this visit vis-a-vis the Good Friday Agreement as we have. And to put a satirical thing on the London Times like that, a very popular big newspaper, there's many million people living in England that buy it and see it and read it. And if that's the image that they have of this visit in their mind, I think we failed, and it's a pity.
Okay, Kevin, thanks for that. Appreciate the call. I'm going to go to Carmel now. Carmel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. Katie, I just listened to Mildred, and you know, Mildred is talking about the hope and the faith of Ireland, her joy. She's not afraid to tell her story, and that's what we Irish are renowned for. And that's why we can stand proud on the world stage with Biden here at this time. And you know, he talked about miracles, Mildred did, at Knock. But I remember very clearly, and I'm sure you do too, and many Irish people will, Father James Horn was on the Late Late Show with Gay years ago. Mm-hmm. And there was many a financier that night, experts in that field. And they all came to the conclusion that an airport in Knock was just would not be viable. And I remember Charlie Haughey was there as well. And they talked and they talked and they gave him all the practical and economical reasons why it wouldn't work. And in the end, Gay looked at him and says, "What do you think?" And he put a wry smile on his face and he says, "Can I tell you something? If Our Lady wants an airport in Knock, she will have it."
So that, yeah, that's, well, that's what they've said, isn't it? This was the original miracle. That
this is the original, but that was a miracle, and they had to move mountains to get that airport. They had to move a lot, but that airport happened, and it services west of Ireland so well. And the miracles are not, we don't remember, sometimes we conveniently forget, but Ireland stands with faith and hope and joy, as Mildred, she's out dancing, she's living life, she's excited about her life. And we Irish, no country can hold a candle to us.
Carmel, thank you very much on that
thank
note.
Thank you, Katie.
On that note.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I'll let you go.
Thank you.
I'll just tell people that they're still all on the tarmac there. There's a lot of talk going on, a lot of chat. They still haven't gotten into the armoured car. It's still standing by. And I'm trying to make out, I'm seeing a lot of suits, so I can't make out their face. The only one I can see there, as I say, is Eamon Ryan and Derek Leary there. And I think, yeah. Yeah, I'll let you know if anything exciting happens there, I'll fill you in. Now, I want to go on, because I mentioned it to Mildred, that we wanted to, we're getting calls and listeners talking to us about Mary Quant, of course. Mary Quant, iconic icon of the 60s, brought, you know, fashion innovator, brought us in the miniskirt, was basically symbolic of a whole era of independence for women at that time. And I want to bring in Anne Francis now. Anne, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. Listen, I was driving out the road here, the coast road here in Galway, a glorious sunny day, and I couldn't get over Mildred. She was absolutely hilarious and wonderful to listen to. I had to pull over because you mentioned Mary Quant.
Yes.
I didn't know Mary Quant died last night because I was out doing cystic fibrosis voluntary work today.
Right.
But that being said, I have a Mary Quant scarf on me today that I bought back in the 60s.
Go away.
Now, I wasn't a fashion icon or a guru at all, as whatever you call me, back in those days. But, well, of course, I had the mini skirt and it was wonderful. But I happened to be in London. There was a cousin being ordained, my mother, back in those days. And I bought this scarf for a present for my sister, who's always very good to us, my sister Margie.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this, I can't remember what it cost. I think it cost a fiver, but maybe it only cost a pound sterling, but or a pound at the time. But it was a fortune to pay for a scarf. So I came home, she was thrilled with the scarf. So I gave it to her for a present.
Take me back to that time, though. Would that have been considered like, I don't know, a Chanel thing, or, you know, were you willing to fork out that kind of money for a Mary Quant scarf?
It was beautiful. The colours in it. I did attach a photo of a piece of it because, as I said, I pulled over in the car and I took a photo of it as well. And I wanted to wear something bright and colourful today because of the job I was doing. That it's kind of eye-catching, you know. The colours in it, it was just fabulous. And it's a wool scarf. It's a fine wool.
And you're still wearing it, what are we talking about, 50 years later?
Yeah, 50 years more, certainly. Shouldn't I get married in 74?
Wow.
And I'm generally, you know, it's 65, or you know what I mean? But 1965, you know?
Wow.
And I gave it to her for a present. And recently, about a year ago or maybe 18 months ago, I had one or two outfits And she's a wonderful sister. And she said, you know, Anne, that Mary Quant scarf you gave me would go lovely with those outfits. I lend it back to you and you get some wear out of it. And I can always borrow it back or get it back if I want it. Oh. So, as I said, I couldn't get over today when I just heard you mention it and the fact that I didn't know that Mary Quant had died last night. I just said, I have to pull over. I have to compliment Mildred. And I just adding that little piece and send the photo of the scarf.
Well, send us the photo. You know, our WhatsApp number, 087-184-3709.
I sent that on email.
Oh, you have it. Well, if anyone else has any...
it's not a great photo because, as I said, I'm parked outside the post office in Barna. And as I said, I needed to post my granddaughter's birthday card to Dublin, who's sharing her birthday with Michael D next week. And my sister Morgan. So a lot of birthdays to be celebrated next week.
Lovely, lovely. But I was just going to say to people, actually, if anybody else has memorabilia from that time, clothes that they brought in London at that time from Mary Quant, that's our WhatsApp number, 087-184-3709. Send them on to us. Can I ask you about the miniskirt? Because I was saying there, we were hearing from people that, you know, a lot of people thought the 60s, swinging 60s didn't happen in Ireland till the late 80s. Was it a big thing to wear miniskirts in your time?
In my time, it was. I wouldn't be as daring. They probably wouldn't have been as short as other people's miniskirts, you know, because, as I said, you know, you were kind of, you were shy. You were, you know, I wasn't very outgoing with fashion.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now I tend to wear not a mini skirt, but above the knee. And the colour, as I said, my colour today is kind of mainly gold and amber today. And people would say, wow. And they say, they could slash off the skirt I've on me today as a mini skirt.
And what is the job today? Do you mind me asking, Anne Frances?
Oh, I was volunteering. Today's Cystic Fibrosis Collection Day, National Day. 65 Roses, as they also call it.
Yes.
So I was doing that with Anne Walsh in the Galway, in Dunn Stores Complex in Galway.
And you wanted something that would stand out, that people would spot you?
I wanted something that when people would walk in the door, they'd spot me and they'd then spot the 65 Roses and the Cystic Fibrosis.
Well, aren't you a smart
woman?
And
I tell you, it works. The donations poured in.
That's fantastic. That is fantastic. That's fantastic to hear. And have you been caught up with the cystic fibrosis charities
No, not really. I'd be more of a Galway hospice person, so I would. But because my friend Anne Walsh is involved with cystic fibrosis, I always give her that. I always give her today.
Yeah, the dig out on the day.
You dig out, absolutely.
And as you say, the donations poured in. For the gold outfit and the Mary Quant scarf.
They did, it was great. Well, I hope Mary Quant scarf and the couple of colours I done me today drew attention to it.
Anne Frances, you know, no more than Mildred, you're a tonic yourself. Thank you so much for that and for sharing that memory with us.
Unfortunately, as I said, I did. Will repeat that number that you just gave out, your 0818.
I'll give it to you. It's 087. It's an 087 number and it's 184-3709. 184-3709.
Yeah, as I said, I'm parked on the side of the road here in sunny Galway Bay. But I'd send a photo of me in at cystic fibrosis, aren't you?
Do that, Anne Frances. Thank you so much.
Katie, it was lovely talking to you.
Lovely
talking
to you.
I've never had the nerve before this.
Go on. Thank you so much, Anne Frances. Take care of yourself.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to go to Maureen now. Maureen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon there. How are you?
I'm good, Maureen. You were also a fan of Mary Quant.
I sure was indeed, yes. But she was a real trailblazer, and I think she was before her time. So, and I think she set the scene, you know, for me as a person. I actually was a hairdresser in the 60s and I trained as a hairdresser. So I was interested in the fashion and the hair.
Yeah,
so
because
the hair,
the Mary Quant hair is so iconic. That
oh
sharp
my God,
bob.
Oh my God, yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And it was just, it just kind of stood out. It stood out, I think.
And tell me, would people have been coming into you then at that stage saying, I want Mary Quant hair? Was that a thing?
Well, not as there. We were a little bit behind London, so not exactly at that time. But you would have got, on Grafton Street, that's where I worked, there was very, very colourful. And the 60s there was like, it was just like, you know, so bright, so cheerful. It was like people had escaped out of somewhere from the 50s. Yeah. So all the shift dress, of course, Mary Quant invented, and that was her style. So it just came in so many shapes or so many styles, different colours, block colour. It just lifted everyone's spirits. And I think it was like a self-awareness and self-expression that you could just be who you wanted to be in the 60s. That was my experience of it anyway.
Because it was kind of, it was a bit shocking for a lot of people, actually, those skirts, the hemline going up at that time.
Absolutely, yeah. And how short could you go? And if you went any shorter, you'd wear mesh tights or something to camouflage if you bent down. And the A-line was good because it covered anyone's figure. So if you're a little bit hippie, you could make I went to the Grafton School of Design at night. So if we made the skirt, if we made the dress, we'd make it a little bit wider if your hips were a bit wider. So it was quite flattering, actually, because the top was kind of tight and it went out in an A-line. So it could be then as short as you wanted. Mind you, I never went that short. But I just felt, when you brought me, when I heard the call today, I said, oh, my God, I'm going on a journey back. Yeah. I was so grateful, yeah, because it was a time of colour, excitement. I was doing what I loved. And then the music, of course, all the soul artists at the time. It was like it was amazing. It was just amazing.
I think it was, really. I mean, what to me, that era, you know, was the time where women were no longer seen as just appendages of children or husbands. You know, that they were people in their own right.
Yes, 100%. And it was the self-expression, I think, when you wore the clothes, that the clothes really said something about you as a person. It was a statement. So when you put something on that was a certain look or a certain square box or something like that, that was saying something about you. So whereas nowadays, that really doesn't happen as much. I don't think we're not like individuals. But at that time, and of course, the hairstyles to go, like if you had a beehive, which were a little shift dress, oh my God, and the colour in your hair,
you
were just a business.
Could you do a beehive that time? Would you have been able to?
Oh yeah, that's what I trained in. Oh my God, I can do everything. I actually, my main job was working on, later years I worked on film, and I've been working on film on and off until last Christmas. So we would have got to do a movie with Jimi Hendrix movie there, and that was all the 60s. So we had all the groups, the Ronettes. So I got a chance to recreate all those looks again, of course, with the costume designers as well. So it was like travelling back in time, and it was amazing. It was just amazing.
And of course, the other part of that look was, the makeup was amazing, the big eyes, the dark.
Oh my God, and the flowers around your face sometimes, the eyelashes, the big eye. Twiggy, look at Twiggy. Oh my God, she's just the icon of that time. You know, you can just put Twiggy, Mary Quant and the music together. And you can, every time I think of Mary Quant, I think of Twiggy. Because she was just unbelievable. Like, and her little face, her tiny body, but her beautiful clothes. And everything looked well on her. You envied her. You know, you'd be thinking, oh my God, I wish I looked like her. But then it suited everyone's figure. I think everybody got, it was a time of self-expression, I think, and colour and new beginnings. And like this, an awakening of something, an awakening, I would find it. That's
I think it was a narrow enough, probably where you were on Grafton Street and go to fashion college at night, that you were kind of probably in the heart of what would have been a fairly small group of people. Whereas I'd say in the 60s, a lot of it were still fairly grim enough times for a lot of people in Ireland. There wouldn't have been that much colour.
I was blessed because I was in a place that was, you know, a really high-class salon. And then you could see all the, like, Grafton Street was, like, there's a beautiful cinema on it, beautiful restaurants, tiny little cool coffee shops, loads of music places. It was just kind of cool, so cool. It wasn't as cool anywhere else, but around there it definitely was. And I would have gone to school at the back of Grafton Street, so I knew everywhere very well. And I just was obsessed with the fashion and the shops and my hairdressing, and I... today just brought me back, like really on a great trip down memory lane.
Will you hang on there for me for 1 second? Because I want to bring in Karen, just as we were talking about the makeup there. Karen, good afternoon.
Yeah. Hi, good afternoon, Katie. Just hearing about the death of Mary Quant brought back a memory to me of being brought there on a school tour. I would reckon it was about 1974. I would have been in St. Catherine's National School in Cabra West and in Miss O'Connor's class, if anybody out there remembers Miss O'Connor. And we literally walked. It was local to us. It was in Broombridge Industrial Estate.
Where?
And we would have walked.
To what?
In Cabra West in Dublin.
But what was it?
Sorry. To Mary Quant's factory. It was a makeup and perfume factory in Broombridge Industrial Estate in Cabra West.
Really? Mary Quant had a makeup and perfume factory in Cabra?
If my memory serves me correctly, because it's a very vivid memory, we were 10-year-old girls and like the makeup, the perfume, and it was just a wonderful tour.
That's extraordinary. I never knew that there was a connection with Cabra and Mary Quant.
Yeah, because I've been kind of listening to your show waiting for it to be mentioned. Which is why I text in.
But that was when you were, you say, 10 or 11 years and you still remember it that well?
Yeah, because I'd never heard of a designer before, you know, and we were impressionable, you know, we were in all-girls class and so makeup was just, it was just exotic. It was fantastic. It was just a wonderful trip.
That is fantastic. Maureen, had you heard that?
Hi there. No, but I was doing a little bit of research and she was involved in makeup. That's right. I didn't know that up to now, but there was a lot of things she was involved in as well besides the clothes industry, definitely logos, everything. Yeah, she was, but I didn't know it was here in Cabra. I didn't know that, no.
I wonder, well, if anyone else is out there and they know anything about that, I would love to know more about that. That is such a fascinating
very interesting
factoid,
yeah.
Karen.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for telling us about that, because I'll just say 51551, drop us a text if you have any more information about that. There's surely other people out there that will know about that factory, or will maybe, if they were taking in school tours, maybe were there as well, like yourself, Karen. And it was definitely Mary Quant, was it?
If my memory serves me well, yes, because I mean, as I said, I wasn't up on designers at that stage of my life, or probably not even now. But it's a big memory in of mine, and that's why I'm just wondering if there's any other women out there that might remember it.
Okay, well, we put that out there. Thanks for that, Karen. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Really good to know. I want to go to, hang on with us again, Maureen, please. If you can, if you have the time, I'll bring in Tony now, if I can. Tony, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie.
Yeah, you also would have been in London at this time.
Katie, I'm hearing you very faint, so I'll just wrap along. Yes, I was in London in the late 60s. I was over in Bidel Sassoon's hair school, and that was part of my training where I worked in the Nassau Street hair salon, which I thought under a great man called Tony Rogers. Now, Mary Quant and Bidel Sassoon were great friends, and Bidel cut Mary Quant's hair in the style that she wore throughout her entire life, which is extraordinary. He also cut Twiggy's hair, and also, like, so what I'm saying is that Mary Quant and Bidel Sassoon both made themselves very popular with fashion as regards clothing and as regards haircuts. I suppose I was in at the beginning of the different styles of hairdressing, from the backcombing and the rollers, where we were into wash, cut and go, or wash, cut and blow dry. So the late 60s and early 70s was an extraordinarily exciting time to be a hairdresser in any part of the world. But Dublin, the Witch's Hut, was synonymous with haircuts, with people coming from home from England to get their haircut, because they couldn't get Bidel or any of his top team. So the miniskirt, the Firefly, the haircut that Jane Fonda had in that film, Clute, it absolutely changed the entire scene, on the hairdressing scene in Europe and in Dublin. And the Witch's Hut only recently, in the last 10 years, decided that they had enough. Tony's still around. I believe he's doing some sculpturing. If he's listening, give me a call. I've lost contact with him since I've retired. So, Katie, is that okay?
No, Tony, can you hear me now, Tony? I'm not sure if this... Oh, good. I just wanted to... So you would have been delivering those haircuts. It takes a certain amount of skill, I think, to do those haircuts.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Well, I only retired 10 years ago, and my reason for retiring, Katie, was because the art and the skill of cutting hair to suit the face is gone bonkers. Because if you look at, and I'm talking about people on RTE, if you look at people on RTE with certain shapes of faces and heads, with their hair parted in the centre, it's pure laughable. It's like having a pair of pants with one leg up to the knee and one leg down to the ankle. There's no logic to it.
I'm nearly afraid to ask you now. You talk about people in particular that should maybe review their hair choices.
I think everyone should go to somebody who knows what they're doing, not somebody who's following a fashion. Because I lost my interest in hairdressing when all this business coming in with twirlers and curlers and straighteners. Like, we spent our lives protecting hair, and those machines and gadgets, they just wreck your hair. Cost you a fortune buying stuff to protect it from ironing it or twirling it at the same heat as an iron. There's no sense to it at all. We went through the extensions. Those people getting the extensions, I'm sure, by the end of the year, their hair was nearly gone from being pulled out, because it's very difficult to sleep with a head of extensions, you know. So
yeah, I have to say, I've never had the extensions now myself, and I'd be very slow to go down that road. I think that sense that you'd be sleeping with kind of knots behind your head.
Yeah, well, when you think about it, I mean, there's kids now of 12 and 13 putting colour in their hair, and their hairs haven't matured. Your hair doesn't mature until you're 16 or 17. And they're putting this muck in their hair. They're buying it in a chemist or in a supermarket. And they say, oh, God, I don't like that. I'll put something else on tomorrow. And they've no idea what they're doing to the hair. Because once you wreck it, it's gone. You have to wait till it grows again.
Well, I can tell you now, my hair was never the same after trying to manage my own hair during COVID and putting some stuff into it that I really regretted afterwards. So I'm with you on that one 100%, Tony. Go back to people on the television with hair. Is there a particular style? I'm very conscious of myself now at this moment in time. Is there a particular style we should be more edging towards, perhaps?
Mm-hmm. Look, underline the word edging. The person with the haircut and the face should be listening to the person who knows what they're talking about. They shouldn't be coerced into wearing a certain hairdo with a certain amount of colour, because I notice one or two, there's one individual now, and I'm very fond of her on the news, and when she came back from America, she had beautiful hair, but it's gone a bit astray in the last 2 years or 3 years. The idea of using a hairbrush, I don't think any of them have a hairbrush anymore. If you go to a wedding, you see these, I call them 20-minute hairdos, because by the time they're out of the church, it's gone. Whereas the person with a haircut that's properly shaped to suit the hair and the face, it stays intact.
But can I put you, Tony... As somebody coming, can I put this to you? That some people are blessed with the kind of hair that sits and behaves and responds well to a good haircut. And some people, no matter what you do to it, it just doesn't respond. It just doesn't do what you need it to do.
No, Katie, that's not the case. The hair will respond to the proper haircut to suit the hair. You don't try and manipulate. Now, for instance, now my wife, when I met Marie back in 1969, she had extraordinarily beautiful hair. But she wore it in the centre like Joan Baez. Uh-huh. Now, the hair parted in the centre, there was always a slight bump on the right-hand side of it. This is because the hair grew in a certain fashion. Now, when I came back from Sassoon's, Marie had hair down Well, it was long. Mm-hmm. And one night we were babysitting, and I had come back from London with this famous haircut called the Firefly. And I said, Marie, look, let's go for it. Now, she's a good-looking woman, tall, slim, and could run with it. And I cut her hair, and it was extraordinary. And her father, Michael, said to me, Tony, you should have asked me first.
You mean extraordinary good or extraordinarily bad?
Oh, God, no, it was beautiful. Her hair, she had wonderful hair to work with. It took a bit of skill, but yes, she wore the Firefly beautiful.
Well, Tony, will you stay there? I love talking to you. And actually, I want you to come around to my house and cut my hair for me.
Will you send a car?
I will. That's the very least I'll send. Will you stay there? I do need to take a couple of breaks. I'll take one right now. Thanks.
Okay, Doc. Yeah, go ahead.
On 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Oh, we're getting so many calls in on this. And Tony, I'm looking at the clock here and I don't have an awful lot of time left. But I did want to just ask you before I let you go. Do you think that cut that we were talking about, that Vidal Sassoon, sharp bob, you know, particularly, like coming from the era where it was, you know, curlers and hairspray and that, it was really radical, obviously. But do you think that's where we should be going back? Do you think that cut in itself suits more people?
Well, the thing about it is that hairdressing now in the city is extraordinarily expensive. Whereas with a difficult haircut and a difficult style, it would need professional blow drying at least once a week to retain that look. So, okay, if you can afford it, that's fine. But from a practical point of view, if you're out going outdoors, a proper haircut, abstain from colouring until it's absolutely necessary. And when your hair is practically grey, give up colouring and go the grey route, because women with grey hair, Helen Mirren, you can see them on TV, and they're absolutely gorgeous. Now, my wife, Marie went the grey route, and it's absolutely gorgeous, because once you apply muck to the hair, it just weighs the hair down, you know. So common sense has to go a long way. I feel that haircutting is coming back again. I know in London at the moment, the different shapes of bobs are beginning to come back, and the shaggy, shake and dry haircut is also back. Now, it never went out, but when the straighteners came in, my God, I remember cutting a haircut in the salon one day, and it was absolutely gorgeous. And then she said to me, I want you to straighten. I said, no, not a chance. I said, out. And I said, go on, off you go, and don't come back.
So the customer
and
wasn't...
And she came back about a week later, and she paid me and said, I'm sorry, Tony, you're absolutely right. And her hair was burned, because in the long run, from using those straighteners, the hair goes brittle. It's like rubbing a piece of parchment in your fingers, you know. So, like, we spent our life treating it and protecting it, and then they come along with these yokes and they, oh, look at.
Okay.
I could waffle all day.
Okay, listen, I'll let you go, Tony. A really, really interesting chat.
Anyway, Katie, if you want a haircut, you have my number.
I have your number.
And if you're down my route, I certainly give you a quote.
Okay, we might send a few more to you as well.
It's been a pleasure talking to you, and have a lovely day.
You too, Tony. Many thanks. And I'll just try and get to a couple of more calls if I can. Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Mary Quant.
I was in London in 1959. Now, I wasn't working. I was just over a bit of a holiday. And I was mad into Mary Quant stuff, and I was mad into dying to wear a miniskirt. But I kept looking at the people that were wearing miniskirts, and all you really could see was a suspender and big thick ties. So I thought, oh God, no, I'm not going down looking like that.
And
I walked into Selfridges in London.
Yeah.
And there was a lady demonstrating over us at the lingerie department. And she was demonstrating tights. And I just opened my mouth and said, oh my God, that's exactly what to wear with a mini skirt.
And had you not seen tights, Anne? Had you not seen tights before that?
No, no. Well, they weren't in Dublin in the 50s.
Wow.
They could have been. I thought it was 59. It could have been a bit earlier than that, actually.
So this is your first size.
I wouldn't have been in London before. I was about 18 then. I know I wouldn't have been in London on my own. Well, I was on my own when I was with a few friends at 16. I don't think my father would have let me go that far.
Did you buy the tights?
So, I bought the tights. 19 shillings and 11 pence, which was exactly £1 per bar a penny. And I used to earn £4.50, 10 shillings a week.
So you spent a quarter of your salary.
Of my money on a pair of tights.
And was it worth it?
I couldn't even afford to buy a second pair. And they were treated better than any baby, I can tell you. I brought them home. I wore them when I was going out with my miniskirt. Of course, I had to nearly go to somebody else's house to put the miniskirt on because my mother wouldn't let me out the door, even though I was whatever age I was. I thought it was 59, but it might have been earlier. But anyhow, I was telling the lady on the phone that I said I used to wear the tights, and then when I come home, they would be washed before I'd get into bed, even though I danced 4 and 5 nights a week. They'd be washed and hung up somewhere carefully that nobody would handle them. And they were handled by me with sort of little plasticky gloves, they were cotton gloves, no plastics in those days. Cotton gloves, so that I wouldn't pull a thread in them or do anything to them. I had them for, I'd say, about 3 years.
Wow, that must be a Guinness Book of Records for tights.
A quarter of my wages on a pair of tights every week.
And
it was crazy.
I have to go. And thanks for that story. I appreciate it. Will we take the break now?
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.